He railed at Roth for letting costs burgeon out of control. Roth let him continue until he seemed to calm down, then asked, "Tell me what you'll make it for." "Get rid of Bruckheimer and Bay, make it for $70 million," Eisner said. Roth was appalled. "You can't do this on the cheap. You have to go all out or it won't work." They argued until Roth volunteered to go back to Bruckheimer and Bay looking for some cost savings. The producer and director were skeptical, but finally came back with a lower number, $140 million, the same as the budget for Armageddon. Garner wanted to cut the ending of the film, the Doolittle raid on Japan that ended the war, which wasn't part of his original idea and would have saved millions. "It's called Pearl Harbor, not Hiroshima," Garner argued. "This isn't about Japan." Eisner vehemently disagreed. "That's the American victory. The Americans have to win at the end. That's why we're making the movie." "Everybody already knows the Americans won World War II," Garner countered, but Eisner wouldn't back down. Eisner finally agreed to $140 million, but then told Roth he wanted no producer or director guarantees, insisting that they not be paid until Disney itself had turned a profit. Though not unprecedented, such deals were rare in Hollywood and hardly ever used with top-level producers like Bruckheimer. Major talent on a film, producers, directors, writers, and stars, typically earned a percentage of a film's revenue, usually expressed as either a percentage of the gross or, more often, a percentage of net profits. At the same time, they were guaranteed a minimum fee. Since most films never earned any net profits, these guarantees were their de facto salaries. Though he had been operating within this system for much of his career, Eisner had long chafed at the notion that the studio put its money at risk, but that talent earned a guaranteed sum no matter how poorly the film performed at the box office. While this wasn't an indefensible position, it ignored decades of economic history. Just as auto workers don't bear the risk of failure of a new car model, talent in the movie industry had used its leverage to insulate itself from the commercial failure of a film. Eisner may have thought this was unfair, but management controlled the making, distribution, and marketing of films. Bruckheimer and Bay were predictably insulted. Bay said he was quitting, but Bruckheimer countered with a compromise. Disney could earn back its investment before any guarantees, but then the producers, director, and actors should get a percentage of the gross above the cost of the film. Eisner couldn't fault the logic, and somewhat to Bruckheimer's surprise, he agreed, though it meant Disney would be giving up some of its profits if the film was a big hit. Bruckheimer patiently lured Bay back, arguing that Pearl Harbor was such a sure thing that they'd more than make up the money by sharing in the proceeds on the back end. Reluctantly, Bay agreed. Bruckheimer stressed to Affleck that this was his opportunity to break through as a romantic action hero. Everyone finally got on board. At times, Bruckheimer felt more like a diplomat than a movie producer. Shooting began, and then there was another snag. After the first dailies were screened, Peter Schneider stood up, said, "I don't understand this movie," and walked out. Then he convened a meeting and announced that he was shutting down production unless the actors in the 13 major roles gave Disney options on their next films. Everyone there was stunned.